In this lesson, you're going to learn how to become a system repair technician. You'll hunt down and destroy the biggest problems and failure points in your systems so that they become faster, more reliable, and most importantly, they don't get abandoned. So there are all kinds of ways to optimize a system and, you know, squeeze every last bit of speed and efficiency out of it. But an incredibly fast and efficient system isn't very useful if it's collecting dust on the shelf. You know, is it? If you haven't experienced this yet, you probably will. The biggest risk to your success with system and routine building is that you'll do all this work to create something great and then never use it. Or you'll use it for a little while, but then, you know, get frustrated and give up on it. First, I want to let you know that this is okay. You know, it happens to everyone and it's part of the process. Sometimes you work really hard to build a system that you think will be useful, and it ends up just not working. This is especially true when you're new to all this and, you know, still learning the ropes. What you need to do to get out of that funk is spend some time figuring out why a system isn't working. You know, why do systems fail? There are several symptoms that you can look for and lots of ways to fix those symptoms. We'll get into those in a moment, but first, let's get into what happens when a system, you know, crashes and burns spectacularly right off the bat. It has to do with motivation. More specifically, a lack of it. One of the biggest problems we face when we build systems is, you know, directing our energy toward organizing parts of our life and work that we're just not very motivated in. You know, we make the mistake of thinking, you know, hey, here's this part of my life that's not very motivating. You know, maybe I can automate it with a system so I don't have to think about it anymore. That approach almost never works. So one thing you may need to consider if you find that a lot of your systems are failing and, you know, you're not using them is that you might be looking to use systems to remove, you know, the boring or uninteresting parts of your life and not focusing on systemizing the things that you really enjoy and care about. You know, systemizing the boring work can work. I don't want to say that it can't. But the key ingredient to being successful with that approach still comes down to intrinsic motivation, right? You have to have something that you are motivated by. And you have to be able to see how, you know, systemizing the boring stuff will allow you to pursue the more, you know, motivating stuff. In the end, you know, you're still moving toward your motivation. If you don't have the motivation in the first place, a system will not save you. Let's assume you're moving the right direction, though, but you're still running into a lot of problems. You know, your systems just aren't working that well, even though you spent a lot of time and effort, you know, to create them. Well, if you remember from earlier in the course, we talked about a concept called Kaizen. That's the Japanese philosophy of continual improvement. A system that works and serves you for the long term requires that you embrace that Kaizen philosophy because no system will work perfectly, you know, on the first try. A system that works perfectly is almost always one that didn't work that well in the beginning, but got the care and attention that it needed to become great. You know, if you have the mindset that you can just set up a new system in one try and everything will be great, you're going to be disappointed. But if you embrace the challenge of, you know, getting through the difficulties in the beginning, you can create really sturdy systems that serve you for a lifetime. So let's talk about how to actually put that Kaizen philosophy into practice. You know, you're ready. You're committed to adjusting and nurturing your systems almost like they're your children, you know, until they perform the way that you want them to. What do you do? It's going to help a lot to know where to look for problems. We need to know which, you know, pieces of our systems are most likely to break down so that we can identify issues and make adjustments, you know, really quickly. And as a quick side note, the better you get at diagnosing and fixing problems in your systems, the more motivating that, you know, system building is going to be for you, because progress and, you know, seeing your work pay off, that's really motivating. All right, so when I look at my own systems and help others troubleshoot theirs, there are 7 places that I look for problems. And I look for them in, you know, in this order, because they range from, you know, big and really easy fixes down to, you know, very small and intricate ones. So the first question I ask when I see a system not working or being ignored is, you know, can the end goal be controlled? We've talked about this before because it's so important. If you or whoever is operating the system isn't completely in control of the outcome, you know, you're going to run into problems. This ties directly back to, you know, the motivation issue too. If you use all the steps in the system exactly as they're intended to be used and you don't, you know, get the outcome that you're hoping for, that can be really demotivating. And if the problem is that the ultimate goal you're looking for is, you know, not actually one that you control, you are never going to be able to reliably fix the system. Here's an example from my own life. A few years ago, I decided I wanted to drive more traffic to my website. You know, so I set up a goal. I wanted 100,000 people to visit my site every month. And then, you know, I created a bunch of actions and, you know, workflows I thought would help me achieve that, and, you know, put them together into a system that I would operate. For months, I followed the plan perfectly, but each month I didn't meet the goal, you know, and each month I got a little less motivated to keep trying. The problem was that I was operating the system perfectly, but I didn't actually control the results. You know, no matter how hard I tried, I could never force people, you know, to visit my site. When I realized that, I retooled the outcomes of the system to focus more on the things that I did have direct control of, like how many articles I published or how much promotion that I did. Of course, you know, I still wanted all those people to come, you know, to see the site, and I adjusted the system based on the results that I saw. But now I had goals, you know, I could feel good about and keep myself motivated. So if you don't have control of the end goal of your system, that system is going to quickly become demotivating. You know, if the goal is controllable, then the next thing I look for is to see if the goal is too vague. That's also a common problem that, you know, I still have to remind myself of to avoid. The end result of your system should be specific and repeatable. The reason we build systems, you know, are often for vague reasons like, you know, I want to feel more calm, or I want to, you know, save time, or I want to lose weight. Those are all fine motivations, and you're mostly in control of them, but they make lousy system goals because they aren't specific enough. There's no defined metric that you can look at and say, you know, yep, I definitely got what I wanted out of this system. So instead of making a goal to be more calm, it could be a goal to meditate for 10 minutes every day. Or any other, you know, number of actions that you could string together that you believe would help you attain that goal. Do you see the difference? So instead of saving time, you might say, I want to cut an hour from this process, and then adjust how you do your work in ways that you think will help you actually save an hour of time. The next problem I look for is whether the system, you know, has ever been used at all. If you built the system but are struggling because you haven't implemented it, the most likely cause is that you're trying to make it too detailed and intricate, right? You over-engineered the system and, you know, burned yourself out before even like really getting started. It's easy to make this mistake. One of the main reasons we create systems is because, you know, something in our life feels big and complex and, you know, difficult to manage. When you give the problem that, you know, larger than life stature, it feels like you have to come up with something equally big and complex in order to fix it. But that's rarely true. Just a little organization and planning can fix many really big problems. You know, when you psych yourself out like that, you start getting bogged down in the details and creating solutions to problems you might not even need to. You know, like we discussed before, the best fix for this is to start small. When you embrace the Kaizen philosophy, you can create something small and, you know, imperfect right now and then improve it over time. You know, basically, don't try to solve problems you don't actually know you have yet. As you start to, you know, operate your system, you might find that the things that need fixing are completely different from what you thought would need to be fixed when you started building it. That's the kind of insight that comes from taking small, methodical steps instead of trying to fix everything all at once, which usually is impossible. You know, if I don't find any big problems in those first obvious places, that means the system is being used, you know, or at least it was being used, but something inside of it is causing the problem. The first thing I do in this case is look for choke points. And the first place I look for them is in the system steps themselves to see if, you know, any of them are too big. So I'll look at the whole flow of the system and try to figure out, you know, how big most of the steps are, a sort of, you know, average step size. And then I compare the average against, you know, each step to see if any one of them are, you know, considerably larger. This is a kind of, you know, subjective measure. You know, I'm asking, does one step take a lot longer or require a lot more thought or work to complete than the rest of them? If I find one that's, you know, really outsized, that's probably the culprit. That's where things are most likely to break down because the flow of the system, it gets interrupted. It's, you know, it's humming along and then it hits this, you know, big step and gets really bogged down. And that abrupt change can be really frustrating, which causes you to, you know, give up and abandon the system altogether. If you're looking at, you know, one of your own systems, this is easy enough to find just by walking yourself through each step and asking, you know, where do I normally give up? Or where do I feel, you know, the most friction? This is really obvious when you think about it, right? But when you're in the middle of it, you know, and life is happening and you're busy and the kids need baths before bed and, you know, your boss is having a bad day, you know, it can be hard to get yourself to sit down and think this stuff through. But if you make the time for it, you'll see how easy this kind of problem, how easy it is to spot if you actually look for it. And the fix is simple enough too, right? Make the step smaller. You know, split it up into multiple steps. A step in a system can almost always, you know, be divided further. And, you know, even though you're doing the same amount of work, it feels like the system is flowing more smoothly, which is a lot more satisfying. So you stick with it. You know, if your steps are all about the same size and they aren't, you know, too big, then the next place to look is in the step outcomes. We've talked about this before, and it's similar to the very first troubleshooting tip that we went over. Just like the whole system needs to have an end goal, you know, that's within your control, the same is true for each step within the system. So if you have a step with an outcome that might change or be variable, you know, even if you do the same work each time, then you have a choke point because it makes it hard to tell when the work for that step is actually complete. When I first started writing, you know, there were just a few steps in my whole process. I would decide what I want to write, outline the article, write it, and publish it. That was it. And, you know, it worked okay, but I got stuck all the time, and the quality of my work was really volatile because I didn't have any specific outcomes for the steps. You know, when was I done, you know, writing? At 500 words? At, you know, 5,000 words? Some other metric? You know, would there be images? What kind of proofreading needed to be done? You know, it was all too vague. And that uncertainty made it hard to focus on writing. So eventually, I decided to break that step up into, you know, many different steps. And my first draft wasn't, you know, complete until I'd addressed every point in the outline. That's the decision I made. Looking back, that seems pretty obvious, but it's easy to make those kinds of mistakes. Once that problem is addressed, I look for problems in the step transitions. Now, this can look wildly different depending on, you know, how complex the system is and whether you're the only one using it or there's a whole team involved, right? But some of the issues I'll look for here are, you know, too much time between steps, steps that are out of order, or, you know, unclear handoffs and transitions. There isn't anything inherently wrong with a system that takes a long time to operate and has, you know, lots of time between the steps. But when that's the case, there usually needs to be some sort of, you know, notification system to remind you or, you know, let the next person know, you know, exactly when it's time to take action. Because as time passes, it gets easier and easier to forget about it. You might have the best intentions to use your system, but you just forget to. In this case, you know, calendar reminders or, you know, other tools that can create cues to remind you to take action can help. Steps that are out of order, you know, are usually easy to spot because they throw everything into chaos. Sometimes, you know, like you notice right away that you can't do what the system says to do next because you haven't completed something, you know, that's further down. That's easy to spot and fix. What's harder to see is when two or more steps can, you know, theoretically happen in any order, but the best order that makes everything easiest isn't immediately obvious. The system just doesn't work that well, and you get stressed out using it even though, you know, technically it works. You have to be specific when you're looking for this kind of problem, which is why I recommend, like, you know, you follow the order that we've been troubleshooting in so far. And in team systems, handoffs between steps can become a big problem. So, you know, one person finishes a step and someone else takes over. That's a handoff. If it doesn't happen really smoothly, that can cause, you know, a system to stall. Now, lots of times the problem is actually further up the chain. It's something we've, you know, already addressed, like, you know, not having clear step outcomes. If that's the case, you know, once the outcome becomes clear, it's easier to facilitate handoffs between team members because everyone understands when one piece of work is done and another begins. Other times, it's just, you know, poor communication. One person finishes their step and the next person, you know, never realizes it's their turn to get started. This is where better notification systems can help you. You know, like moving your system into a project management platform where it happens automatically. You can also address this kind of problem by improving your chain of custody. We talked about that in detail in a previous lesson about how to build team systems, so revisit that lesson if you think you might be having trouble here. The last question I ask on my troubleshooting list is simply, you know, is the system just too simple? We want to keep our systems as simple as possible, of course, but we also have to balance that with, you know, reality. Sometimes we need to add, you know, detail and complexity in areas where things just aren't working. For instance, you know, sometimes there's no way to guarantee the output of a step in your system. You know, I have a promotion system for my writing where, you know, I pitch my articles to different outlets to try to get them to cover them or, you know, reprint them. Since I can't force an outlet to, you know, cover my work, I can only take some actions that I think will get their attention. But that's not, you know, actually good enough. If I, you know, if get attention is the goal of one of my steps, that's going to cause a breakdown because sometimes you just don't get any attention at all. That's just how it goes. So I need to add conditional logic. Maybe I'll wait a week and send a follow-up message. If that doesn't work, then I move on to the next step in the system, you know, or, you know, head down a different path. There, you know, now I have an unambiguous step that won't cause the system to stall because I finished the work, but, you know, don't have a clear way to move forward. These kinds of, you know, little tweaks can be made all over a system to speed it up, remove ambiguity or stress, and, you know, ensure the results you get are more reliable. If you've gone through all the other troubleshooting steps, then this is where you'll want to spend your time. Looking for ways to add conditional logic to problem areas so that, you know, whatever result you get at the end of a step, you know what to do next. All right, so here's what we learned in this lesson. First, we learned, you know, the primary reason most systems break down is due to a lack of motivation. You know, if you're not motivated to do the work in the first place, then building a system for it won't help much. But then we learned that when you do have the motivation, you know, but you're still struggling, there are, you know, 7 things you can look for to help you find and fix the trouble spots in your system. You'll want to make sure you have control over the end goal and that the goal is really specific and measurable. Avoid making your system too complex from the very beginning. You know, don't try to solve problems you haven't actually experienced yet. Next, you want to look for choke points. You know, make sure no single step of the system is too big. The outcomes for each step are really clear, and the transitions between steps are nice and tight. Once you've gone over those things, you can start to, you know, make smaller adjustments to account for any variables that might make the system smoother to operate. If you go down the list each time you run into a problem in one of your systems, I can guarantee that you'll find the issue. And once you know the issue, fixing it is usually not that much work. You know, most of the work is in the diagnosis. Go ahead and apply this troubleshooting plan to one of your own systems right now. Pick one that you've been struggling with and work through the steps until you find the problem. Then go ahead and make a plan to fix it. And when you finish that, I'll see you in the next lesson.